to me, the key for writing John and also talking to Eric about John is that villains don't think they're villains.
I'm talking to Alexandra Cunningham, the showrunner on the new Bravo series Dirty John. The Eric she's talking about is Eric Bana, who plays the title character, who she wanted for the show and fought to get.
I definitely think that John developed some kind of superiority complex in conjunction with a sort of persecution complex, like that no one's as smart as I am and also everyone's out to get me, and so therefore anything I do to sort of save myself and get what I need is justified.
From the Los Angeles Times and Wondery, I'm Chris Gofford, and this is a special bonus episode of Dirty John. For those of you unfamiliar with the term, the showrunner is not just the head writer, but the arbiter of 1,000 production details, large and small, from casting to costumes. Basically, the CEO of a corporation that forms for a few harried months and then dissolves. Cunningham's first job in the role was the American version of Prime Suspect.
One of the things I loved about the Dirty John material was it was actually an opportunity to write a lot of the different kinds of stuff that I've written in my career. There's procedural stuff in there, law enforcement procedural stuff. There's, you know, obviously the emotional twisted fairy tale version of it, which, you know, I mean, I always, soap seems to be kind of a dirty word in our business, but I actually think any story that has emotional stakes is a soap. Like, I, Claudius is a soap. Saving Private Ryan is a soap.
Cunningham spent 6 years writing for Desperate Housewives, and she sees parallels with Dirty John.
When Desperate Housewives was good, it had a lot in common with this story, even though the story really happened in the sense that, you know, here's these women, and they're on an emotional roller coaster tightrope, and it's about love, and it's about fear, and all of the things that this story is about, except this really happened. The core of The Sopranos, the greatest show ever, is love and family and murder and fear and all of the things that this story has. So, like, because maybe everything goes back to the Greeks, I don't know.
I first met Alex Cunningham at Roscoe's House of Chicken and Waffles in LA just before she signed on. And from the beginning, we agreed on what I thought was an essential point. The series was not going to try to explain John Meehan. It was not going to put him on a couch with Dr. Freud in a search for childhood horrors that might serve to mitigate or justify his awfulness. I didn't think of Meehan as a man wearing a mask that concealed a wounded, more vulnerable, more authentic self. I thought of him as only masks, concealing total emptiness. I thought of the scene in The Invisible Man where the hero peels away his bandages and there's no one there. In the writer's room, more than once, Cunningham made the point that one reason people want explanations for John Meehan is that it gives them the comforting illusion that he's somehow defendable against.
People want to have John completely explained because if they think if they know the reasons behind his behavior, then that will help them avoid a person who behaves like that. Except, of course, obviously, you wouldn't know these things about your John if he came to you and tried to do the things to you that John did to women. You wouldn't know any of those things about that person, so it really wouldn't help you. I will feel sorry for you up until the point where you injure someone else, when you weaponize what happened to you. And so that was important to me, to not feel like that's what we were doing, is trying to elicit any sympathy for John, except perhaps as a child, because in episode 5, we do a little talking about how the con artist part of him came from his father, who was very proud of possibly being related to famous mafia figures.
Episode 5 of the TV series gives us a glimpse of John Meehan's childhood. It shows him under the influence of his father, a small-time crook who ran a card room and introduced young John to a variety of swindles. At one point, as they sit together at a restaurant, the dad passes the boy a shard of glass to bite into in a scheme to get money out of the owners.
You know, so Alex really felt that John was a black hole. And I know you guys really felt that. But as a director, I couldn't really work on those.
This is the director, Jeffrey Reiner. He's best known for his work on Friday Night Lights and The Affair. He's directing all 8 episodes of Dirty John.
I can't give an actor directions or, you know, play subtext if there's not subtext. So if you're just playing somebody who's an evil person, then you're going to have a lousy performance. And so, you know, Eric and I would really discuss a lot, you know, what motivates this guy. And so you have to dig deep for that. So when we go back to episode 5 and we see his past, I think it's all right at that moment in that boy's life to feel sorry for him. But when you go to the future, it doesn't justify his behavior. It just gives you, you know, this is what he turned into.
Director Jeff Reiner says that when he first met Alex Cunningham, their conversation focused on the series' point of view and how to transcend the conventions of a straight thriller.
The normal approach to this material would be a thriller where the woman's looking over her shoulder the whole time. And that's not something that Alex and I were interested in. We were interested in kind of deconstructing it and telling it from different points of view.
The most striking shift in point of view comes in episode 7, which is told from John Meehan's perspective. Here's Eric Bana, who plays Meehan, describing it.
We get to see what he was doing for an hour before meeting Deborah on that first date that we enjoyed in episode 1. We get to see what he was doing just before stealing the drugs that he was administering to a patient. We get to see how many women he was calling before he called Deborah the first time on that, you know. So it was a pretty raucous, bawdy idea for an episode that, you know, we tried to have some fun with as well. And we realized that for those people who, you know, want to embrace the dark humor, that there's a lot in 7. He's in his RV in the middle of the desert, being rejected by other women and packing Viagra into his pocket and doing drugs. And it's just, and we see him lying, we see him on the phone lying to people. And one of the things I loved about 7 was, you know, John being on his own. One of the things that fascinated me about this character was, which, you know, you allude to a little bit when you played the audio from the wedding, is that he had no friends, which was really fascinating. You know, because some people claim to be lone wolves or claim to be sort of loners and stuff. But John, to me, was a true loner in amongst people.
Reiner, the director, told me he spent a lot of time thinking about Travis Bickle, the violent loner from Scorsese's Taxi Driver. Reiner is also a fan of the director Billy Wilder and the darkly comic tone he brought to classic noir films like Sunset Boulevard and Double Indemnity.
So tonally, I had to make sure that there was a sense of humor, which, quite honestly, I got from you, from the tone in which you read it. I don't know if it was purposeful or not, but I always felt like there was this slight ironic kind of take on the material.
The real-life John Meehan was a con man and a sadist who hurt more people than we'll probably ever know. A creature of malevolence so pure, it's hard to think of analogs in my long experience of writing about very bad people. But nobody on the Dirty John series thought it would be interesting to portray him as a glowering papier-mâché villain.
So he had to be charming, and he had to be funny, and he had to be, even in his evil, had to be somewhat funny. Yeah, there is this character who might think he's in a Scorsese movie, or he might think he's an ultimate villain. And so that will dictate what he says and what he does. You know, there's a scene where he goes to meet Toby at the door and Toby calls him out for being a liar. And around after take 4, I told Eric to eat a sandwich while he's doing it. So there was this kind of cavalier attitude, you know, when he's telling him all this dark stuff, you know, he's chomping on a sandwich. So to me, it just gave the character, like, that scene suddenly a nonchalance to, like, his evilness, which makes it even more evil. But it does make it somewhat darkly funny. So,
and also, he's a predator having a meal.
Yeah, well, I never thought of that thematically, but you're right. I mean, I'll let you...
Some film school students will write that essay.
They might write that essay.
You can catch the premiere of Dirty John on Bravo at 10 p.m. on Sunday, November 25th. It's a production of Universal Cable Productions and LA Times Studios, and this is the last of three special episodes about its making. And here's a reminder that before it was a TV show, it was a work of journalism. You can find the original LA Times series plus 14 other pieces of narrative journalism in my new collection. It's called Dirty John and Other True Stories of Outlaws and Outsiders by Christopher Gofford, published by Simon & Schuster.